Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When I was in sixth grade, I became the target of a really intense bullying situation. And there was a specific girl who was the ringleader of the bullies. She started rumors about me. She turned all my friends against me. And I honestly don't even to this day know why she did it or what was it about me or something I had done that caused this to happen. But I went from having like pretty normal social life to almost all of my friends refusing to talk to me, not sit with me at the lunch table. I felt incredibly isolated. And honestly, I remember coming home from school so many days that year and going to my room and just sobbing and weeping. I mean, it was so bad. My parents were trying to help me transfer to another school, which was logistically complicated. And so I ended up not transferring, but it was truly an incredibly difficult year. And there were two things that got me through. One, I had such an inner sense of confidence. I didn't really think I had done anything wrong. And frankly, my parents did a really good job of helping me put the leading bully's problems into context. I just was aware that she had a lot of problems at home. And honestly, because of that, I was able to keep the worst of it a little bit at arm's length. I have been very aware of the impact of bullying inside schools and in the way that it can really shape our experiences as kids and the way that we view and remember our childhoods. I think when you go through something really hard like that, you become sensitive and your heart breaks for other people. I know that empathy and kindness is the antidote to bullying, and people having self-compassion and self-awareness to not become bullies. But it's easier said than done. And I think today, kids are under all kinds of different pressures. Society and youth culture keeps changing and evolving, and being kind for the sake of being kind is something that we talk about all the time as parents in our home. And I don't want to say that we're experts at it or that our kids are, but that it's critically important, which is why I think it's helpful to have meaningful and rich conversations like the one I'm having with today's guest. Hey, Mama, welcome to the Motherly Podcast, where we have honest conversations about modern motherhood. I am Liz Tennedy. I am a co-founder here at Motherly, and I'm also a mother of five myself. Today's guest is Jacqueline Lindsay. Jacqueline is a mother of two, an author, and the founder of kindness.org, a nonprofit that takes a science-based approach to build programs, partnerships, and products that empower people to choose kindness. In today's episode, Jacqueline and I talk about what it really means to be kind and the impact that choosing kindness has on our kids and our families as a whole. We also talk about kindness to ourselves and how there's really another ripple effect that begins within us. I love that part. We talk about the science of kindness, as well as the systemic challenges that modern parents face with everything else that we have going on to make sure that teaching kindness doesn't take a backseat to everything else. Jacqueline also gives us some really helpful tips on how to start conversations with our kids about the importance of being kind and how to support them in better understanding and communicating their feelings. Jacqueline Lindsay, welcome to the Motherly Podcast.
Thanks, Liz. Thank you for having me.
We're so excited to learn from you and be inspired by you. Tell us, as we start, what surprised you about motherhood?
Oh, goodness. I think I'm surprised every day, to be honest. I think what surprised me is that I didn't want to be a mom, actually. When I was dating my now husband, I was pretty clear up front that I didn't see motherhood in the cards for me and just wanted that to be known. And now here I am with two little boys. So surprise, people can change. but I think probably one of the first things was I was surprised at just how much you have to surrender. I can control so much in my life, but I can't control anything about being a mom.
You said so many things in that answer. And I do want to just thank you for being so candid. I feel like, you know, women and we were often not allowed to say certain things like, maybe I don't want to have kids. And I appreciate you as a mom now talking about that. But can you tell us about the stages of being a person who didn't want kids to now being a mother of two and a kindness educator and advocate?
Yeah, I think I've always felt called to a career and I've always felt called to working and having a desire to impact the world, and not that you can't, those things are mutually exclusive of being a mom. But whenever I did think about my future and my life, being a mom just never felt like it was a pull or in my DNA in any way. And then the older I got, the more I felt pretty cemented that I just wanted to focus on a career. I married an incredible man. We wanted to live a life of adventure and discovery and felt really grounded in that. And we would check in every so often. And I still just felt like, yeah, I don't think I want this. But then I remember one day very vividly, about 7 years into our marriage, he said, I want to share honestly that there's a part of me that feels like I do want to be a dad. And I just want to talk through those feelings with you. And I said, I still feel like I don't, but I'm going to take time to really consider and thoughtfully, prayerfully sit with this big idea. And that was a big stage of transition and change. I remember going through the subway thinking, could I be a mom? Would I be a mom? What would that look like? How do I feel about it? And then the next stage was like, I was open to trying, knowing that getting pregnant is like a mini miracle, a mega miracle probably. And I got pregnant the first time, actually, that we set out to intentionally try. And I still had trepidation, but here we are, and I've never looked back.
I mean, what shifted in you, in your identity or in your sense of what you were capable of, or just your values in some way? Like, what in the ground underneath your feet shifted to make that possible, from a hard no to like maybe? And then, of course, we know how that story unfolded.
I think a lot of what relates to the work I do today with kindness.org is that I had a lot of struggle growing up. And I think in hindsight, Liz, I wouldn't have known this at the time, but I think that as I realized what I went through as a child doesn't have to be what my children would go through, I think I was carrying a lot of my own past and what it would mean to then bring a child into all of that. And once I could separate, I'm working on a work and mission that's changing the future, hopefully, it all of a sudden allowed me almost permission to realize, like, no, they're going to have their own life and identity, and I'm now going to help rear them up and raise them up in a way that can be different than what I experienced.
So powerful. Tell us then about your work, founding kindness.org, investing in creating the work to create a kinder society. And really, I'm curious how it does relate, as you mentioned, to your upbringing, your sense of self, your sense of mission in the world. So where did this concept come from?
Since I can remember, I've always felt like wired for loving people, just wanting to be a helper. I'm the daughter of an immigrant, and my parents really instilled in me the idea that there's no human better than any other human. You never look down on someone unless you're helping them up. So I did always think I would do something good in the world. And I started in middle school going through some pretty traumatic bullying experiences, and it affects you in so many ways. I certainly lacked all the tools that were needed to go through the things I was experiencing and going through. And then that did lead me down a path of struggles with depression and identity, and that led to drug addiction. And so pretty much within the span of just a few years, from 10 to 20, I lost sight of every aspect of who I was. And I realized through a lot of time and healing therapy that kindness could be our greatest asset for people and humanity, but unkindness could be our greatest adversary. And I knew that I would want to do everything I could to live in a world where no person, no child would have to go through those kinds of things.
So you founded kindness.org. Tell us about your mission.
So we are one of the only nonprofits that conducts scientific research and answers some of the biggest questions about the role of kindness in solving modern problems and how it can help humanity thrive. And then we apply those findings into evidence-based programming for kinder classrooms and companies. And the idea for me is that when I landed on the idea of kindness as like a mission to pursue, I was thinking, well, this feels very nebulous, very wide and big, and very difficult to understand impact or how you would measure the change of a kinder world or toward a kinder world. And so I went out to evaluate who was out there looking at kindness, empathy, compassion, and very quickly found that there was a really unique opportunity in the space to bridge the science and solutions, to come at this with data and evidence and sound research, but still build things that were accessible and usable in the everyday environments we find ourselves in. So our formal mission, we educate and inspire people to choose kindness. We all have the choice every day with how we're engaging with kindness, and it's up to us to choose it.
Tell us some of the most interesting findings about kindness as you've compiled and studied and talked to experts and applied your programming. What is the science showing you? What really lights you up in that data?
It has a deep evolutionary history. So I was really fascinated to discover just how far back kindness goes. This isn't a new idea. It's been around since the beginning of time, and it's how humans have made it this far, actually. You thrive under kindness. It's not just survival, but it's actually how you work better together for the greater good of your community and the group that you're in. There's a genetic basis, which I found really interesting. This isn't something that you're born without. It's just a matter of like any muscle, how you cultivate it. When you think about the power of kindness and the impact on our well-being and our happiness and mental health, there's extensive research showing just how powerful it is for you and the other person. Those are a few of my favorites.
What about unkindness? As you are very aware, we're living in this generation of a growing body of awareness of our own traumas, our own pain. And generationally, we've had so many different experts on this podcast alone talking about this topic, working on healing it. But, you know, there is not only unkindness in the world, there's unkindness within all of us, within me, within my family. Where does that come from? And how do you define it and understand it?
I think it's remembering the root of how we're raised, nature versus nurture, if you will. So it's you start and it is what nature has given you. And then you're infiltrated with a lot of outside perspectives and opinions that are infused into who you are and what you believe. The thought is that nature and nurture kind of shake out in an even way by the time you're reaching adulthood. You are who you are, and you've been shaped by all of what you've been raised in, the environment you've been exposed to. And so I think that one, it is lack of tools and knowledge, which is why we focus on equipping people and starting at the youngest of ages so that children have that in their toolbox and understand how to navigate these big complex things that we face as adults. Even my own personal experience, I had unkindness and that led me to be unkind to others. It was my defense mechanism. So I think it's such a wide range of reasons. But what I always remind people is you can always start somewhere. Every act makes a difference.
So your programs, tell us about them. What do they do in schools?
So we launched Learn Kind, which is our flagship initiative. We started with education And when we looked at the social emotional programming that was out there, there's a lot of amazing initiatives and curricula that exists. We surveyed hundreds of educators from urban, rural, public, private, charter, all over the country. We also conducted focus groups. And consistently, the themes were that the existing programs they found were expensive, lacked flexibility. They didn't reflect the diverse makeup of the classrooms that they were teaching in. And they didn't take home life into account. And finally, one of the probably biggest ones for us was that a lot of it was very prescriptive of kindness. It's very difficult to tell a five-year-old to be kind. It's just, what do they do with that? So when you're prescribing kindness, it's very hard for that to translate into meaningful action or long-term change. And so we developed Learn Kind, which is, as far as we know, the first social emotional program based on inquiry-based learning. The students actually are student scientists, and they're not told to be kind. And on the contrary, instead, they're just told, this is what we know about kindness to date. This is what the science teaches us, but you're a scientist and you're going to go on a journey for yourself to figure out what is kindness to you, how does it show up in the world around you, reminding children they're responsible for their choices. We actually start with mindfulness and emotional awareness. They go through several modules teaching them emotional regulation. It's okay that you're angry. It's what you do with your anger. And then they continue to build up to learn about empathy and the role of what empathy can do in helping you learn about other people. And all of it ends with action, reminding them always and reinforcing, you're choosing how you engage with these things. You're responsible for your decisions. So how can we empower you to choose kindness throughout?
As a mother, how have you taken all of what you've learned and sort of infused that into how you raise your boys? Because I'm imagining you have this body of research, you built this incredible, innovative program. And then you have the science experiment of the actual boys in your home and trying to infuse this into their lives. So I'm curious how you have woven that into your own motherhood journey.
Love it. So a lot of it really is about posing questions back and letting their natural intrinsic curiosity as growing small children be at the forefront of how we talk about these things. So I really try hard to not prescribe kindness, but to remind them to look for opportunities. When we're reading a story, I'll stop and talk about the characters and ask them, what do you think the character's feeling right now? Why do you think they would have handled it like this? We have a jar that we call the Choose Kindness Jar. And the idea is, if I see them choosing kindness, I'll make a note and remind them, you chose kindness today. And that's not always easy to do. And they'll always think like, oh, is this something that would go in the Choose Kindness Jar? And they'll talk about it and realize like how much their actions affect everyone around them. And whenever there's an opportunity to teach them about others, you know, we try to do activities as a family, like delivering baked goods to all of our neighbors and just walking around talking to people and telling them why kindness matters and trying to find opportunities like that where they can be more participatory in things. So those would be some of the areas where I try. And I have seen a lot of times the opportunities for unkindness is definitely sibling to sibling. Like when they're just not respecting each other and not respecting boundaries, it's a really difficult thing. And you have to sit down and be like, hey, how could you think about this in a way where you're honoring this person and what they might be feeling and going through? So those are some of the things that come to me.
So helpful, in particular, that it's not about the prescription, not about do this, don't do that, but being in conversation. And actually, my kids used to attend a Socratic-based school, which of course is inquiry-based, and we're huge fans of the method because of the way that it invites self-reflection and responsibility, with kind of putting the responsibility for that growth on the kids and letting go of control as the adult and wanting them to have the right answer, but really you just get to see how powerful it is. And in fact, I've done some research myself about all different kinds of philosophical traditions throughout culture and time that have used asking of questions as sort of the primary teaching method, which I just find interesting intellectually as a concept, but as a parent, really helpful and useful tool.
Yeah, I love that, Liz. I wish that could be something. I think it's changing, but just asking more questions. Even at dinner, we really try hard to just go around and everyone gets to ask any question. There's no question off the table, and just creating that posture of curiosity. And we have family values that started with my husband and I, but now the kids are a part of it. And it's like, what do we want to stand for? It's an organizational value as well, but being curious, just we never are going to have the answers, being open to always evolving, being open to learning. And the more that you can keep that posture of curiosity, I think you're going to do great in life.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Couldn't agree more. You talked a bit about your kind of pre-motherhood evolution that you went through, the hardship you faced growing up, how it shaped and inspired this professional mission that you have. But I'm also curious about how you have come to practice these values through your own motherhood journey. You've been a mom for 5 years. How have you used mindfulness and empathy and kindness and self-inquiry to understand the phases of this transition to motherhood that you went through? And I'm sure it wasn't always this linear path of constant growth, but like times when you're self-critical and it's difficult. I'm just curious what that has all been like for you.
Yeah, the first thing that came to mind, both my children were born with really rare conditions and they're both okay. One is fully healed and okay and had surgery at 6 months old. And the other one is on track to being okay. And he's my 3-year-old and will most likely do surgery when he's 5 and his body can handle it. His has required more ongoing care. And I have faced often the feelings of just guilt. I think there's the guilt of just general guilt that all moms go through of, am I doing it right? And we're facing exhaustion and fear and uncertainty and comparison. And, you know, there's so many things that can feel like they're against us. But mine felt even more compounded because I work full time and I run a company. I run this nonprofit. My husband became a stay-at-home dad. And so I have had to work through a lot of asking questions of like, who's the mom I want to be? Who's the entrepreneur I want to be? Who's the wife I want to be? Who's the woman I want to be? Because they're all different. They all have competing things. And I don't know if I believe in the idea of balance anymore. So a lot of my work has been on acceptance. This is the path I've chosen and the path can evolve and change. So it's questioning that. Am I still happy? Am I still fulfilled? What are the things that need to change as my children age and need more of me? And then on the personal side, much more vulnerably as far as the critic. Last year, I had this thing happen where I realized I still look in the mirror and talk negatively every morning to myself. So it was horrific and eye-opening and just realize you don't even know what's on autopilot in your mind. And someone just posed a question like, oh, well, what do you say when you look in the mirror every morning? And it was like, I couldn't believe that I was mostly, oh, hey, good morning, ugly. How you doing today? And this idea that I was still carrying 30-year-old things that happened as a child as my truth. And so a lot of my work the past year has been on changing that narrative and learning how to love myself. It's like, if I can't love myself, how can I teach my children to love themselves? So that's where I've been personally. Very difficult and painful, but necessary to go through.
Who and what supports you through that growth?
Definitely my husband. I feel incredibly fortunate to have a partner like him. He gave up his career. Kindness was kind of my first baby, is what we joked about. And when I did get pregnant, we had a lot to figure out. We were in New York, and do we send them to daycare? You know, what do we do? I knew I didn't want to stop working at that time. So, gosh, I'm just so grateful for all the ways he shows up as a father and husband and support system to me personally. I do have a strong faith that has been a guiding light through a lot of uncertainty. And even that, frankly, I've started approaching with curiosity. I think for a long time, it was like this very black and white box of thinking. And I realized, wait a minute, this isn't who I want to be or what I actually believe. So I've been on a whole journey of questioning everything instead of acting like I knew everything. So that's been really wild and humbling. And I feel very grateful for an incredible network of friends and community. Really grateful for the women that champion me, and I hope I champion them as well.
You mentioned earlier that your research shows that human beings thrive under kindness. And when I imagine kindness, I imagine this network of care, of inner relationships, of people showing up for one another. And when I think of it that way, it's no surprise to me that I don't think many mothers would describe themselves as thriving in a culture where it's all on the individual and it's not on the collective. There is no village in the ancient tribal way that we did live. And then there's no support systems in the way that other countries have, right? No paid leave. Childcare is all on the individual and incredibly unaffordable. Certainly the research we do at Motherly to study this shows that home duties are still majority on mothers, caregiving responsibilities, even when they're the primary breadwinners. So you have this unkind ecosystem for mothers, and yet mothers wanting to thrive and certainly wanting to raise kind kids. What do you think it's going to take to bridge some of that gap for mothers so that we can get out of survival and into this kinder future where we even have a chance at thriving?
That's a big question, something I think about a lot. I would say that unfortunately, we're most likely still decades away from any feeling of really huge change in that. I mean, you look at the feminist movement and we just hit 100 years since we could vote and how long it took. So I think what I would say is it's at a systems level. Systemically, we're talking about policy change. We're talking about government shifts. And we, for the first time ever, are making strides by having the first female sitting as a vice president who can be an advocate for these kinds of change at the policy level. But that takes a long time and it requires patience that a lot of people don't have. It requires a willingness to advocate and to vote and to make a commitment that you're going to try to see changes at that level. I also think the thing about paternity leave, maternity leave, and all of that, really, it's one of those things that gets me so upset to know that we're so behind the curve. There's so many issues where we have a lot of data to show us how it's working and the benefits of offering this from other very advanced and developmentally strong countries. So why are we so behind the curve on it? So it's frustrating, but I think in time, I believe we're making strides toward changing that. In the interim, there's new initiatives within government funding, but that also depends on a lot of who's in office and all of that. But I have seen personally a lot happening within social of trying to create opportunities for connection and help. When I moved to St. Pete from New York, I didn't know a soul, but I joined a mom's group. It's called the St. Pete Moms Group, but there's some gay husbands who have joined. And, you know, so I joined this and I am daily overwhelmed to see a woman come on and say, I need help with diapers. And just the slew of women saying, where are you? I'll bring you a pack. And you know, strangers. But this idea that I think people are realizing we are stronger together and we're in this thing of motherhood together, or even parenthood. I think it's recognizing also parenting looks different in this new day and age. I grew up in a single mom household with three girls and every family dynamic's different. I think remembering empathy for what we're all going through, finding resources that are near you. I have to believe there's help out there in different ways. And sometimes it's a matter of looking and remaining hopeful that your children we'll hopefully be a part of a generation where we're seeing real systemic change to allow these things to no longer exist. It's a great question and very complex.
Well, I agree. And I thank you. I think also talking about it, as you were saying, kind of raising those of us who have platforms to be talking about it and advocating and helping people feel seen. I think maybe a generation ago, our moms went through very similar things, but didn't feel seen and their stories were not being told. And so it's part of that growing social movement that has to happen in order, in advance of real systemic change. You also mentioned digital communities and the ways that they're used for good. I have seen the same thing. I agree. Motherly, in part, has a very large digital presence and social communities on a ton of platforms where moms connect to one another. And as a mother, I read the same articles everyone else does about the harm that social media can do for kids. And I think I've become even more convicted over the past few years reading the research that's coming out that I, as someone who uses social media and runs a social media-based business, want to keep my kids off of social media as long as possible. What do you see in your data around kindness and living digitally? Because this parenting with cell phones and kids with smartphones, like I always like to remind our listeners, we're the first people doing this. It's a new frontier. And so what are you seeing in your data and what recommendations do you have for parents trying to navigate this? My oldest is 11. It feels like it's here, this conversation. And it's a big source of concern of mine, and I'm sure many of our listeners.
And rightly so, unfortunately. I think what we know about the data, it's a real cause for concern. It is the Wild West. And like anything, when you're pioneering something, it's figuring out what works and needing to adapt accordingly when it's not. So we are the guinea pigs, unfortunately. Our children are the real guinea pigs. Like, they are literally raised where they know nothing other than phones and technology and all of that as a means and tools for constant communication. My three-year-olds, I'll never forget when I was trying to keep my phone away, he would go hunt around the house until he found it in my purse or hidden away in our bedroom and bring it to me because he's so accustomed to it being in my right hand. And as a little baby, he couldn't understand if I didn't have it where it was. And it's like alarm bells galore. This is deeply concerning. I think each family needs to navigate things personally based on their child and maturity levels and what they believe they can trust them with. I would say for me, being 5-6 years out from even an 11-year-old, I bet things are going to change drastically. But I know today, I wouldn't give them access to social media. There's a lot saying, well, they're going to get it no matter what. So don't you want to have rights over it? But that's where I think it comes into what your relationship is with the child's. And I think that it's about making sure you have a safe space at home for conversations, because the truth is there is going to be exposure no matter what you do to control things, no matter what parental rights you have on the, like, you can do all the things, but if they want to get access to any of that, they can and they will. I would think about it as, how are you creating a conversation where you can talk to me about anything and there's no judgment, you know, making sure they know truly that you're not out to hurt or harm their childhood experience. You're there to protect them and keep them safe, even if
I say that. I tell them, like, I'm not trying to be mean. I'm trying to protect you. And they're like, oh, you're the worst.
Rolling of the eyes. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's a part of being a parent. That just is.
It's a part of it. It's a part of it. But it is concerning what's happening. The data shows it in a lot of different ways. While there's opportunities for good, there's enough risk and harm out there that we're seeing with cyberbullying, anonymity, what can happen behind the scenes that you have no control over. And so I think it's a very frightening time, not to be doom and gloom, but I think it is a time where we're going to learn a lot. I think laws will have to, again, going back to system level change, laws will have to start to change. Social media companies will have to step up in responsibility. When your child is the user, the person, if you will, that they're trying to get the attention from, and that's what drives the bottom line, there's just nothing they won't do at this point. So it is a difficult time, I think.
You meet so many kids through this work and get to really take the pulse of the next generation. I am curious, what makes you optimistic from learning and connecting to this up and coming generation? What makes you hopeful?
I feel hopeful because these are kids that are wanting to be ambassadors for global change in a way that I just don't think we've ever seen before, because this is one of the benefits when you try to find silver linings of things. We're more connected than ever. And so children are being exposed to things that, I mean, me growing up, I would never have had access to some of the knowledge and insights and information we have today. And if it can be used for good, it's showing children what people in other parts of the world are going through. It helps them be more globally minded. It helps them have perspective in a way that they might not have been able to do through a traditional textbook. And I see an opportunity with them in that they want to create. They're so passionate and they're so bold in wanting to create things that benefit all people. So they're more environmentally conscious, they're health conscious, they're socially conscious. And when you add all that, these are the kids that are going to change us for the better, I believe. So I do encourage people to remain optimistic, because I think that we're bridging things in a way where we're more advanced, we're able to move more quickly, we're able to conduct things like research and experiments and everything much more quickly. Things are moving so much faster. And in that accelerated way, while there can be a little risk, it just means that the kids are going to be able to create more change more quickly.
So you mentioned earlier this inquiry-based program, this how your research led you to create these programs and ways of engaging with kids that doesn't tell them what to do, but asks questions that where they can begin to reflect and explore their own inner worlds as well as the world around them. I have found that car rides are a great place to ask questions. I'm sure there are other times, bedtime, other quiet moments throughout the day. Are there a set of questions that parents might learn from you and kind of take and put in their toolbox of what kinds of questions do we ask our children to begin to develop self-awareness, empathy, open-mindedness?
I love that. So I'll just spout off a few. Did you learn anything that surprised you today? What memory will you take out of today? What was something that you just really stuck with you? What brought you delight or joy? What made you laugh or smile? Did you see anyone going through anything that made you feel something for them? It's not even asking if they acted upon it, but you know, sometimes kids will be like, oh, I saw someone homeless, or just what it opens up about what they're actually witnessing through their eyes. Did anything happen today that was really difficult on you? That was like, you didn't know how to navigate it. You didn't know how to respond to it. What was it? Are you comfortable sharing that? And I think depending on their ages, of course, there can be some of like, I'm not going to talk about that, mom. But sometimes there's a lot of incredible fruit that can come with these things. And then I am a little on the nose. I do want to say, did you experience any kindness today? Did someone do something to help you? Did someone do something that you were grateful for? Is there anyone that you want to acknowledge? Is there something we can do to say thank you to somebody or that you want to reach out to? So it's asking those kinds of things about just what's on their mind. And then what was hard? What was hard about your day? Was it a bad test you weren't prepared for? And sometimes I'll add examples so they can kind of think about what it might be for them. So those are a few of the ones that I kind of have on rotate.
So good. Wrote some down. I'm taking notes. I need them. I need all of them.
Let me know how it goes today.
I definitely will. Thank you for that. So good. Is there anything that I didn't ask you about that you would like me to, or that you think listeners need to know?
I just want to encourage anyone listening, no matter what your day has been, it's a new day tomorrow. I hope that you can know self-kindness is included in how kindness shows up. So find that quiet moment for yourself, and just want to encourage us all to figure out how to love ourselves, because that is how, when our cup is full, we can pour out to others. When we neglect filling our cup, we deplete what we can give to others. So
I'm nodding my head, underlining, starring, putting the highlighter on it. That's what we're all about here on our podcast. So thank you for those wise words. At Motherly, we believe that motherhood brings out our superpowers. I'm curious, what do you see as your superpower?
I think I'm really good at being silly with them, which is a little surprising to me because I can be pretty buttoned up, but I love like rolling around with tickle fights. So I feel like the power of laughter and being kid-like with them is something that comes to me. And they do often tell me that they've seen and learned kindness through what we do together. So that's just means a lot to me that it's being exhibited and they're experiencing it.
That's beautiful. Well, Jacqueline, Lindsay, thank you so much for joining us on the Motherly Podcast.
Thank you, Liz. This was such an honor.
Well, that's it for this episode. Thank you so much, Jacqueline. And thank you for listening to our podcast. We'll be back next week with another great guest. You don't want to miss it. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. We will be back next week with another great guest. You don't want to miss it. The Motherly Podcast is executive produced by Jennifer Bassett. Our senior producer is Marissa Bramwell. Editing is by Joel Edinburgh. Our music is from the Blue Dot Sessions. I'm your host, Liz Tennedy. Thank you so much for listening.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.